I've been uploading stuff on the internet since I was like 14, 15, right? And like this last year, been some of the first times where I really like see that directly, you know, that fit.
What are you seeing as the most effective businesses being built in this subsection of the economy?
At the end of the day, it's like long form and depth will always be king. Whoever can fill seats, whoever can fill a room, whoever can sell a t-shirt or a book, that's the real strength.
There's a lot of people in our audience who have questions about creator partnerships and how to like get in with a brand. From your experience, what made for a successful partnership and what that looks like at the moment?
It is such a long game. You just want to put the relationships over all else versus just like extracting value, that being the mentality, because you're always replaceable.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zierer, and today we're speaking with Nathan Graber-Lipperman. He has been covering the creator economy as a writer for about half a decade, both for his own outlets as well as Colin and Samir's published press. He's also built a thriving business of his own around content, community events, and brand deals. This one was really fun. My colleague at Creator Spotlight, Natalia Perez-Gonzalez, and I shot this in person at Nate's Chicago studio. Enjoy.
Okay, so I first became aware of your work when I started doing Creator Spotlight. I was looking around who else was writing in the space, and you were at the published press, which it's been like a year and a half since you left, which you were only there a little longer than a year and a half anyways. So you were a full-time employee there. This is all to ask, how do you make your living right now? We're in Powder Blue, your space here in Chicago. But what is your business? What do you do? How do you pay rent?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And even just like thinking back to that time. So before I joined Publish, I was running Powder Blue in a kind of different form. It was just me working out of an apartment up in Lakeview here in Chicago and managing several creators, actually helping them with their brand partnership deal flow, their operations, you know, making a solid Notion workspace and keeping it running. And then starting Creator Mag on the side. That was at night. I was, had this whole vision to create the Rolling Stone for the creator world. And we can talk about that more, but to like kind of get back to, your first question here. I was in LA working for Publish. I was like, okay, I want to bring Powder Blue. I want to build a team. I want to open a studio space. I'm going to bootstrap this thing. And like, when I look back on that decision and leaving out an important part, I'm going to do it in Chicago.
Yeah.
To pursue the vision to the degree I wanted to, right? Like, we needed this physical space. We needed a place to film. We needed a place for our team to come together. But I also knew that it was always like our community is what was going to carry us, right? We needed a watering hole that people could come to every week for show your work nights, just to like have that infrastructure that, the city has to a degree. I won't claim we're like solving all these problems, but just like a bridge for the specific community, you know, we were speaking to and writing for and all that. We were very fortunate to like, we opened this place January 19th or so, and then hit the ground running from there.
January 19th, what year?
2025.
Yeah.
We started working with, we signed a long-term partnership with Fourth Wall. They've been great partners to us. So it's an e-commerce shop, as well as memberships. That spans across our print magazine, our newsletter, our YouTube channel, and our events. We've worked with other brands like Notion, the Brand Safety Institute, Gigastar, which is actually, I believe you've spoken with them, but they're a platform based here in Chicago too. So yeah, just, brand partnerships across our, entire kind of suite of media and live stuff has been definitely like the bread and butter of the business, how we pay rent, as you asked. I think like, I know a lot of these conversations, it's always like, okay, what's like the pie look like, right?
That is the question.
You're like, yep, Wayne's.
He's interviewing himself for us. Yeah.
I would say right now it's like the pie looks like, 80% brand partnerships, maybe close to like 70, 75, 20% being product sales. So that's a combination of the magazine, apparel, annual subscribers, right? From there, it's really like event ticket sales and then like YouTube AdSense kind of like making up the remainder of it. So in my heart of hearts, I would love to get to a point where it's more of like a 50-50 split where like the product business is just growing and our subscriptions are going up. The events, right? Like we've had just a ton of momentum with our events in the community we're building. So Yeah, like I would really, just from a, like both the business I'd like to build, as well as just like, I think that supports the creative we're making the most. When it is very community powered and product backed, then you're not always out there having to, you sell one ad and guess what? You got to already be thinking about, I got to sell the next one, right? And it's a process, and it definitely, you know, changes the type of media you make, right?
Well, to that point, like you said that your entree into the creator economy, you were managing creators back before you joined Publish. I imagine that means you were selling ads, and that was sort of a proving ground for everything that you're doing now. Can you tell us a bit more about like that early period, your entree into the creator economy, managing creators, and starting Creator Mag?
Yeah, I actually started my own publication back then that expanded into a podcast network. We had, you know, 10 shows at one point. I helped produce a podcast called Whistles that was with three guys on the football team. So it was, you know, like Big Ten football players talking about Big Ten football and all that. And, you know, I'd be like coming into the city to interview the CEO of Spikeball. Spikeball was founded here, you know, Threadless, these different startups.
Threadless, I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And as I was saying briefly before, like this was a real like coming out of my shell, you know, just like being in a big city, being from like, you know, a suburb in northern Connecticut, right? It's a real opportunity for me. I was just writing and podcasting so much, but doing that for like 3 years from like 18 to 20, 21 got me like incredibly burnt out. I was just like going full tilt. And then the pandemic started.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden it was like, oh, like college kind of just like ended. And I was like, okay, looking at this body of work that I did kind of produce, you know, like what were the through lines and where was media going? What had I learned? So, you know, with the pandemic, obviously, like so much viewership, everyone was sitting indoors. Like that's when I think, you know, the narrative around the creator economy began to take off, because all of a sudden you had this VC interest, right? At the end of 2020, 2021, there was billions of dollars being invested in Spotter and Jelly Smack and all that. So there was also all of a sudden like, okay, there's like this business interest more and more in where ad dollars were moving. But the third thing that just was like a light bulb moment for me is just like, hey, I've met a lot of people. You know, it's like I've done 200 podcasts and I like, you know, have this network and everything. Right when I graduated college, NIL just became a thing. So it was like I got connected with a friend who started this company that was, you know, connecting student athletes with brands. It was the Wild West back then. You know, it's like still kind of the Wild West.
But this is like 5 years ago.
Yeah. But back then, right? But
wait, take us off track for a second.
Yeah.
Your air quotes, you just, you know, back then, that was more of a joke. But a second ago, you were saying the creator economy. And I thought it was pointed that you put that in air quotes. And I also saw, I think in one of your posts, it might have been the recent post announcing Offline Mag, put creator economy in quotes. There's something here.
I mean, I think the creator economy is just the economy.
Yeah.
Like I've felt that way since 2021, like when it became this buzzword that all of a sudden, like I remember Legion, the VC, was writing about, like, you know, it became this whole thought leadership thing. It's just like, it's been so obvious for a while that it is just the economy. It's like there are brands and there are companies and there are people who have thriving organizations that have nothing to do with social media or not on the internet. You know, like I joke with my partner jokes with me a lot, just like, you know, that like things exist and people have lots of influence and power in like government, for example, that you have no idea who they are, right? It's like, for sure, you know.
We don't talk about maybe we do talk about the government economy, but not the same way.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, okay, anyways, I got you off track.
But yeah, I think that's where I come from. It's just like, it's just the economy.
I agree.
You know, we can talk about the term creator and all that for sure.
We'll get that.
But so anyway, yeah, just like while doing this at night, I was like, okay, I know I have this unique angle from all my time writing and podcasting about, you know, my previous publication, what I call Gen Z culture and life. But that was such a broad bucket. And I felt like, again, this creator space, having seen that one podcast, you know, some of the different folks I'd interviewed, it's like I felt like I could really contribute perspective, especially since so much of the coverage that was emerging was all about the business side. It was all about the creator economy, right? So I was like, yeah, like there's really no place to talk about the cultural impact that some of the online personalities and artists and, you know, folks building real community online. There wasn't really like an outlet covering it in a like formal journalistic sense, right? So that was always like the vision to build the Rolling Stone for the creator world. Titled it Creator Magazine because it was like, this feels pretty on the nose, right? Entrepreneur magazine, all that. Didn't think a ton about it, just like hit the ground running. And yeah, throughout 2022, again, like while doing the day-to-day stuff at night, I was, you know, just cold emailing folks, watching different folks, reaching out and just pursuing, you know, these different stories. And yeah, just like, I really do credit. I mentioned briefly, like I had experienced some like burnout when I was younger, pandemic, we all went through a lot. But this year, 2022, when I was like, I'm going to make 4 print magazines and I'm going to write 80,000 words and I'm going to like travel and do photo shoots and, you know, really commit. The thing I always look back on that year being, you know, 22, 23 is by the end of the year, I was like, I had that confidence of like, I am a writer. I am a journalist. Like, this is for me and there is something here for sure. So again, I know I went in a bunch of different directions,
no, that's but okay.
That was kind of the story leading up to before publish.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you have a lot of experience in creator partnerships. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what, there's a lot of people in our audience who have questions about creator partnerships and how to like get in with a brand. What did that look like? Because I feel like now there is a different world building that happens for a creator partnership to be really successful. So I'm wondering from your experience, what made for a successful partnership and what that looks like at the moment?
I think for one, like I always saw a dissonance, especially in that like 2021, 2022, where again, creator economy was becoming this buzzword and you had all these companies raising money and I'd go to these events at VidCon or just like different things. And there'd be all these people talking about the creator economy. And I'd just be there. It's like, do any of y'all like not only talk to actual creators, but like, have you ever uploaded a YouTube video? You know, and like, I don't say that from a place of like, it's a weird thing to be elitist about, but like, I don't say that from like a place of elitism, if you will, but I say it just from a like, to fully empathize with what goes into the creative process, the time spent, the, you know, mental battle of like putting yourself out there publicly and, you know, how much people see numbers and think about numbers and all that. That was something I always just kind of thought about when it came to creator partnerships was like, okay, like especially being the middleman of like, how do I like properly like work with, you know, a client to like get something done on time, right? But then also translate to a brand of just like, hey, this is like a real person with a real life, you know, putting their creativity, their name, you know, everything like out there, you know, to work with y'all. So I think that was like one of my really early insights was just like about being more of that like bridge, I guess. I think these days, like over time, what I've really come to learn and I think I share with like, you know, people who might be up and coming or younger or this or that. It's just like, people always say that like business is relationship. I keep doing the air quotes. But
that's going to be in the thumbnail. There's going to be some air quotes.
But, you know, people always talk about like business is relationships, right?
It is.
And I think there's just, especially with like the rise of short form, there's just this mentality of you blow up really quickly and you burn out just as quickly, right? It's like, because there's always someone after you. There's always like this replaceability. Mm-hmm. And the folks either I've talked to or worked with or just like seen their stories or my experience myself is just like, it is such a long game. And like, you just really want to form, like you just want to put the relationships over all else versus just like extracting value just in like that being the mentality. Because like, I just talked to you all about how like, hey, creators are people too.
Yeah.
But also people who work at brands are people too, you know, and, you know, like forming legitimate relationships that go beyond just like a pitch, you know, is something that I always think has like carried, you know, me at least throughout my career and, you know, our journey here at Powder Blue. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's like kind of the advice you were thinking for like,
well, I think, I mean, you're saying basically to some, you're like, people like to work with people they like to work with.
Exactly.
Like, quite simply.
It's like the numbers matter, yeah, for sure. It's like brands, you know, if it's like brand awareness, right? It's like, okay, like open rates matter, right? You know, engagement matters, like all that. If it's more performance-based, right? Like most of if you're a brand buying, you know, space on YouTube through AdSense, right? It's like, okay, they care about conversions, right? Like at the end of the day, it's like those things do matter. You know, I have talked with folks at brands who have been like, I gotta be honest, I've sponsored so many short form videos and like some of them, you know, really do numbers. Maybe some don't as much. And like, I'm just like left questioning, like, where has this led us at all? You know, and that was a brand that was spending more on events, right? And spending more on like forming those in-person relationships and stuff. So like, again, people like to work with people they like. They also like to work with things they believe in, right? Yeah. So, you know, there is like short form that certainly performs and converts, right?
It's usually more of an exposure play, though.
Yeah.
I want to get back to your business. So
yeah,
we don't have to recount like your entire time at Publish, but you coming out of there, obviously Colin and Samir, yeah, remain like, especially in the YouTube space, sort of the premier creator economy,
yeah,
publication. You coming out of that and being part of this, from the outside, from what I understand, a pretty well-run media business about, I'm going to keep doing it, the creator economy. What do you then take out of that to your own business when you come back to Powder Blue? Like, what are the lessons you take out of your almost 2 years at Publish,
yeah,
with Colin Samir?
I like the adjective well-run, because I do feel, especially like, you know, just like, so many YouTube businesses are, and like a lot have grown up, but it's like, you definitely know like the environment you're stepping into. It's like, it is scrappy. It is like startup-y, you're moving quickly. You know, yeah, those two guys are like very good guys behind the scenes, just like they're just good human beings. You know, there's also the other side of Publish, the smooth media side, right? And, you know, those folks worked at Morning Brew, you know, Josh, Kinsey, Jenny, they know newsletters. You know, if anyone knows newsletters, like, they know newsletters. So, you know, a different step for me coming from, like, writing a lot of long form, you know, and definitely being more on the art and culture side to then learning, like, okay, like, how do you put out a newsletter 3 times a week, right? How
especially
do
you, more news-based than what
yes,
you're doing.
Yes, 100%. It is like a trade, you know, it is a skill set, and to learn it, again, from people who had been doing it for a long time and at the top of their craft, right, having Kinsey edit my work all the time, you know, it was like, I think I picked it up, like, by the end of, like, a month, but it was like a crash course for sure, and I can't speak highly enough, my co-writer at the time, Hannah, as well. But it's just like really small and tangible things. Like, you know, Colin and Samir, like, they've spoken about this publicly, but their dream was to be like documentary filmmakers, right? And they still do that, you know, to a degree on their YouTube channel. They've published documentaries with Mr. Beast and Mark Rober.
But they didn't intend to make documentaries about digital media creators.
And they didn't intend to start a podcast and that to be like the main thing. But, yeah, you know, they found this lane, they made a name for themselves, they continue to go down it. And, you know, I was probably like the whole only human being in Los Angeles who was trying to navigate it without a car.
Wow.
So I lived like a 20-minute walk away from our studio in Venice, and I would be walking down 8-lane streets in LA and people just look at you like you're crazy with your backpack on and all that. But I loved it. And it turns out the apartment I lived in was like at the time down the street from Colin. So he would give me rides back from the studio like a lot of the time. And I just remember like early on those conversations, like he'd always bring up this point about just like, look, like at the end of the day, like to have a physical space that I get to show up to every day and to be around other creative people doing creative things, it's just like such a blessing. And I don't want to put words in his mouth. I forget how exactly he said it. But again, it's just like such a, like, it's a small and tangible thing from like, it's not some big,
well, I mean,
blessing.
It's actually quite tangible. Could not be more tangible.
But that's what I like, you know, I wouldn't say I was like immature before like Publish or anything, but like you do writing a newsletter 3 times a week that has never missed a send, that goes out at the same time, and being accountable to a team, and showing up, you know, for other people every single week. having a space then when I was in LA to like go to, right? That just taught me a lot because like it is hard as a creative to show up every day because so much of your personal, you put so much of your personal into your work, you know? But yeah, I just think like taking that into like everything we do here, just like I think that level of rigor and accountability is just like, you know, we might make a video that gets 50,000 views. We might make a video that gets 400 views. But at the end of the day, what matters is that you show up the next day.
Yeah. If you're a creator, you probably did not get into this to spend hours uploading files, writing tags, organizing assets, and digging through analytics. That's why OpenVideo built an MCP server just for creators. It lets an AI agent manage the operational side of your video business from a single prompt, uploading, tagging, organizing, and analyzing your entire channel for you. And unlike traditional platforms, it all happens on infrastructure you control. So let AI do the busy work while you do the important work of creating content your audience can't live without. See how you can do more with AI at open.video/MCP. That's open.video/MCP.
So rigor, tangibility.
Yeah.
We've got stacks of Creator Mag over there, including the final one,
the
eighth issue. That's really the seven issues combined into one. This is clearly something you really care about. I was flipping through them in here earlier. They're really high quality, probably cost a lot to produce. Why did you start doing those? I think you said in 2022 you did four of them. So there's eight. You've been doing Creator Mag for like 5 years.
With a break in between.
With a break for the publish. But yeah, tell us like why you decided to start doing those. And then by the time you did the seventh one, which was the most highly produced, like what it took to produce that, soup to nuts, to use the term.
You're not wrong. That print is expensive, especially like any product business. It's the classic, the more you make, the cheaper it gets.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this idea of like across anything, money begets money almost, you know, it's almost easier once you're selling. Well, duh. But like it gets exponentially easier.
Marginal cost goes down.
Yeah. When I started it, like, I mean, to be quite honest, it was just like, I just wanted to make a magazine. I never made a print magazine before. That was kind of just like the baseline, just like interest. But then slowly it became, it's like, okay, there's so many podcasts out there. There's so many newsletters out there. When I'm reaching out to someone, like, this is actually unique, right?
I should say I'm aware of the, it's a little bit ridiculous that we're a creator podcast publication interviewing somebody who also has a creator podcast publication who used to work for another creator podcast publication. So all that being said, we don't have a magazine, and I know, you know, Press Publish, they've published a little bit, but I think it's very impressive that you've put this together. But anyway.
I appreciate that. But like, and like, again, like I can like spin up all this like flowery language, but like, to be quite honest, like the initial one came from that, like just creative urge. But I also felt something, right? Like I felt that coming out of the pandemic in particular, like more and more people, especially people my age and younger, were just getting burnt out from their screens. We're getting burnt out from algorithms. Personally, like I like reading print, you know, just like when I am on the train or bus every day to and from the studio, like that's my time to like actually open.
Still don't have a car.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a big reason not to move back to Chicago. It's like, I love public transit. So, you know, it's just like, there was a lot of intentionality behind it. Like, sure, there was the like creative impulses, but there was this like, how can we create this experience where like people actually have an opportunity to log off and be immersed in these, you know, worlds and these stories that have been kind of left in the dark and left behind for so long. It's just like crazy going from that first one, which I was explaining to you a little bit before, but was literally my roommate at the time, a friend from college, Mateo Price, who we just like walked out the door and just like took photos at Wrigley Field. It was a 10-minute walk from where we used to live. And just like, I thought he had such a fascinating story, starting his own creator analytics startup when he was 19. I'm like, I'm the one to tell that story. And we just laugh about it because he was our featured speaker at the book event we had in January. He's now the chief strategy officer at Mr. Beast.
Oh, wow.
So it's just funny how like we just, you know, have continued down those paths and everything. Yeah, like I also will make sure to give proper credit to Moi Zhang as well, who had reached out to me, you know, on Twitter, long, long story there, but the short version is that she then ended up joining Publish. If you guys read the newsletter, she's the one who does a lot of the graphics.
Yeah. Great graphics.
Yeah, it's just like for a long time, it was like, again, it like started from a place of love and passion, but then it became more and more like, okay, people are interested in speaking for this writing, like the people who are sitting down to spend time with it, like the depth is really resonating with them. And then in relaunching Powder Blue and Creator Mag at the end of 2024, it was like, I personally felt that we were getting to this moment where like in 2021, it still felt crazy to like, I would get the vinyl thing at best of just the like, I guess it's a collectible. But I just felt like where culture has been shifting and just like, again, people being burned out from their screens and all that, like, it felt like this was the time to like double down on print and everything.
So sure. the seventh one, which you said it's perfect binding.
Perfect bound.
Yeah, perfect bound. For that one, in very practical terms, like how long it took to produce, how many people were involved, any like production costs you can share, what you sold it for. Can you give us that sort of practical breakdown?
Yeah,
of that
one? I know I'm speaking to the like impetus and all that, I know you'd asked about like the unit costs and stuff, but yeah, I mean, so that one was our first perfect bound edition. It's 96 pages, 12 contributors. That was like, again, when I started this thing, it was me writing 20,000 words per issue just by myself, right? So to like open up this like writer's room and just like, we got so much inbound of people like interested in, you know, contributing that like we had to sort out and color code, you know, 100 submissions and stuff.
Right? 100 submissions.
Wow. Yeah, between the first one issue's got 120 and another got like 70 or something. And like, you know, that issue has like an NPR journalist is in it. Like we got like real like pitches and stuff, which was just like very exciting, you know? But yeah, per unit, what it came out to those ones, I want to say are like $15, $16 per, and we were selling them around like $30. You can see the stock we have left. So I guess it's like 10 copies left or so of that issue in particular.
Maybe 9 or 8 by the time we leave.
Yeah. True. It is crazy seeing how far we've come from that first issue I made that was 25, 30 pages to like this 300 page book. And like, that is no easy feat, and all credit in the world to Moy for like, she designed that whole thing herself, which is nuts. That's not normal at like GQ or the New Yorker. It's like, if you read the masthead, there's 70 people working on, you know, this. So we're definitely doing it all on hard mode for sure. But like, again, I think it's what has always stood out and made us different. And it's the art and soul of what we do, the commitment and intentionality that goes into writing long form carries over into our videos and our, you know, our events and all that. So,
So Creator Mag, we've been talking a lot about it, does not exist anymore. At the beginning of this year, you threw this end of life celebration for it. There was this big lead up. I kept seeing it in the newsletters. You in a suit, we're going to have a funeral. It's kind of like, what's going to happen? It was a really well-run campaign, right? And you put together this beautiful 300-page version of the magazine, compiling everything from before. Why were you ending it? My guess, before I let you answer, is that it's kind of like, this is this project that I started when I was a different person and like had a different understanding of this industry. And now I've matured and probably as yourself and in the way I'm approaching this work, and we need a new container. I noticed that like on your Substack, it's, you just changed the name of the branding. It's the same like Creator Mag archive for offline. All of that to say, why did you end?
Do you want to switch seats?
Yeah.
Like you said. No, I mean, it was, you know, as I kind of mentioned before, it's like, over the last 5 years, I just really grew to feel that the word creator began to mean everything. Mm. You know, comedy creator, music creator, like event creator I've seen before. Yeah. I'm just like, you know, just because someone hosts an event and posts on, it's like everyone posts on social media.
Look, as people with creator in the name of our publication, this is a headache.
Yeah,
it's an awkward conversation for sure.
And I just, you know, really came to this like understanding. It's like when a word means everything, it really means nothing,
right?
Yeah.
So there was that just from a branding perspective, right? But also to your point, it's like I do think like where we were always moving towards, like again, just being more of a arts and culture, you know, focused publication. The through line between all the subjects we always covered that I felt, you know, John and Hank Green, right? They're not only authors and YouTubers, but they're also created VidCon and Crash Course and do incredible nonprofit work, right? Maya Higa, who we covered recently, you know, she's been called Gen Z's Jane Goodall. She's this Twitch streamer and animal conservationist who has her animal sanctuary, Alveus, down in Austin with, you know, 50 animals and 15 employees, right? And the through line with all these stories was always that, like, these are people who share their lives online, but they really use the internet as a tool to create real world impact, right? Mm. That was just like, again, the through line I always found most fascinating, the thing we wanted to pull, the thread we wanted to pull on more and more. And that's kind of where the genesis of, you know, we used to have a sticky note up here in the studio that was just like 100 names of just like, so when, once we finally renamed the publication, what is it going to be?
We have that Google Doc ourselves.
And like towards the end of last year, it was just like offline continued to stick. Because I think just like you're seeing that word more and more.
Well, wait, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I'm going to read a description of Offline Mag from your post in February this year launching it. So Offline is a print and digital magazine. We cover the artists and online personalities who wield internet influence to create real world impact. Why? Because we believe physical and digital spaces are converging, and that relationship is one worth exploring and interrogating alongside the people at the center of it all. So I really like that, the artists and online personalities who wield internet influence to create real world impact. This goes back to what you were saying earlier, air quoting creator economy. It's like, this is just the, like, this is just everything now.
Yeah,
like,
everyone shares their lives online to a degree. And, except for mysterious government people.
Except for mysterious government people. Well, yeah, some of them maybe do on Finstas, but.
Or leaked signal chats.
Yeah, with the editors of major traditional magazines. But yeah, I really like that. Like, you're changing it to offline because it's like, it's not interesting to purely look at like what are people doing on the internet anymore. It's like, what are people doing on the internet that has bearing in the real world, which I even hate to say that because the internet is also the real world.
Well, right. And that was like I wrote a piece towards the end of 2024, like right as we were launching into all this, and it was following, you know, the election and, you know, a lot of the takes coming out of it of just like the liberal Joe Rogan thing. Right. And the, I saw this, there's this one think piece, a lot of think pieces about the internet is real life, right? And like, I think a central, you know, I could tell you about the bowling tournaments I hosted in high school or the like pickup conversation stuff I did in college or this or that, but like, it's always been, at least for me, like, you know, throughout like our work and everything, it's like, whether it's like a bookworm or a camera nerd or a, you know, internet bohemian, if you will, like I keep doing their quotes, like those people all enter our world in different ways and interact with online culture in different ways. But I know that we're succeeding and our mission is working if those people meet in person and have a real conversation, right? I wrote this essay at the end of 2024 that was all about the internet is real life, but it doesn't have to be. Because, you know, it is our time and attention that we give to these spaces and that we, you know, spend online as opposed to like actually looking other humans in the eyes like we are right now, right? It's like, it is a choice that we make, even though it feels less and less like a choice, right? Given how addictive, you know, all these algorithms have gotten. You are starting to see stuff like this landmark trial, right, that happened with YouTube and Meta, which I know has some controversy on both ends, you know, freedom of speech and all that. You know, I think again, like the brunt of offline comes from like, you know, it's like the media we're creating and the world we're building. It's like, not only do we just want to bring people together in the real world, but like when I hear someone tell me that they like read our reviews in our newsletter and they like actually go and watch the pieces we're recommending, and then that changes the things that they create from maybe they were doing like video essays that they knew could garner a ton of views, but they changed that to like, I'm going to go film a video trying with my girlfriend to break the record for going to every single train stop in Chicago.
In like the fastest.
In the fastest time.
Because they want to do that.
Yeah. And that's an actual thing that happened from someone in our community. It's like he's told me, it's like he's given me this like beautiful feedback, at least, you know, for me, of just like, and seeing that impact of like our work has like directly changed how he approaches his own creativity and everything. And I feel like that's like, as we define success, that mission to make the internet feel smaller, right? It's like those incremental steps, you know, if every 1%, right, how does that add up when you look just like at an overall contribution?
That's sort of the powder blue mantra or slogan, right? Make the internet feel smaller.
Yeah.
When did you land on that?
You know, part of it came from when Moy first reached out to me over Twitter DMs. She was this college senior who was just like, hey, like, she was an intern at NPR on the design side. And she was like, hey, like, I really want to break into the space. I will be your unpaid intern for the summer, blah, blah, blah. And she sent me her portfolio of work. And I was like, holy shit, she's like really fucking talented. And, you know, obviously we got to know each other on like a human to human basis from there, right? And all that. And that was just like one of those moments of just like, okay, like, we all know the internet's not all bad, and we all know that the internet can lead to connection. And so, you know, through our message and through what we're doing, it's like, it's never been like internet bad, real world good. You know, it's just like how you wield it and how you use your time and attention and all that. So anyway, to come back to your question, just like, yeah, that make the internet feel smaller. I think it just came from like not only how like our team met, but also some of these stories we picked up over time. There's this one DM I got to that was extremely long from a 19-year-old at the time who was just like, hey, like, I'm like discovering all your work and, you know, it really speaks to me where I'm at in my creative journey. And like, I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but he said something along the lines of like, your work like helps me find my place in the world. Right. Yeah, if you watch the first video we put out last year, that's a central part of the story, because this kid, Judd, at the end of that video, I actually invited to fly him out to our first event. And then he reached out after that and became our summer intern last summer. So that was like, if anything embodies like making the internet feel smaller more than that, like, I'm not sure what does, you know?
So I want to talk about events. So I was bringing up earlier how...
Yeah, the celebration of life. Yeah.
And it was like, to me watching, it was like, oh, this is exciting. Like, what are they're going to kill the magazine? Like, he's not quitting. Like, this... some like trick. There's some marketing like campaign, and it's good. And then you threw this celebration. I think 60 people came out in like a snowstorm. You were mentioning that you used to do these bowling tournaments in high school. You've done bowling events now through
Time. We did on Saturday.
Yeah. And then earlier, you know, you were joking about like these the idea of the events creator. And I know the tweet you're talking about. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, so like we've written about this too, how more and more people are throwing events. Natalia wrote this great piece a couple weeks ago talking to a few people. Maybe I think you're in that too, who have been throwing events more and who are creators and the creator event. What is that? All of this to say, like, this is very important to you. And I think you've articulated already why. We don't need to recover that again. But in a practical sense, like, producing events is can be a real
hard
pain. Yeah. And I feel like most people I speak to who produce events are kind of, what's the word? Like, reluctant event producers. Tell us about how you make these things come together, the type, like there's the bowling tournament, the celebration of life. You have these
show your work nights,
the show, precisely the show your work nights here. I don't know if there's like one that's a perfect example to talk to, like how it comes together and how you get people to show up, etc. But producing an event that people come to and love and want to come back to the next time, how do you do it?
Yeah. And I'll also touch on briefly, because I know you bring up the celebration of life and that campaign. And it definitely was like, we knew we wanted to go forward with this rebrand. And that was like our first time, like, this is gonna be like a 2 to 3 month like campaign.
How do we do this elegantly?
Yeah. And I wrote out a whole Notion doc. And, you know, also it's like, we were trying to like, it was pretty clear, like a tongue in cheek funeral, but like, you know, if someone didn't have a family member pass away recently, right, it's like, we don't want to like trigger anyone. Right. But yeah, that was like a really special night, and like how that all came together and how it played off out across channels and stuff. Anyone who works an event will tell you it's always stressful. Like, it can get less stressful, for sure, just like over time as you build out processes and, you know, build real momentum, community and stuff. But yeah, our kind of approach to 2025, like along with, I guess, my experience as well as just like what we're trying to put out into the world, and just like the notion and understanding that our in-person community was always what was going to carry this, right? And those face-to-face relationships and the kind of work we're putting out and this, you know, print product we're making. So there's that of just like, you know, the business, if you will, but there's also just like, what do we actually like want to do, you know? And the studio, like even renting the space came from mentality of like, yeah, we want a place to work, but we also want to like fill it up.
Yeah.
So coming into 2025, it was like, we're going to do 4 block parties. That's when we bring our neighborhood together, how we refer to our readers, you know, different folks, you know, in our community. Those are going to be like our magazine launch events. It's a chance to have programming with creators who are featured in the magazine. You know, just like be a little bit more formal, the pop, you know, really celebrate this thing coming out. And then, you know, once a month, twice a month, 3 times a month, we're going to host like free, you know, drop in, come by the studio type stuff that really is for like forming those more intimate, you know, connections and everything, right? Conversations. And started with like 3, 4, 5 people showing up, and slowly 7, 8, slowly like 10, 12, 13, 15. But yeah, like Show Your Work is one that like really just was a series that we kept up because it was just like, how often, you know, do we just like put work out on the internet these days and it just gets swept away by this algorithmic current?
People crave a smaller internet, if you will.
People want to show off their work and they want to talk about it and they want feedback from real humans. They don't want all their feedback to come from a comment section and everything, right? And I think I talked about this at our first block party, and I like still think it like stays true to this day. It's like, we're not making money off of those things when people drop by the studio. If anything, we're leasing the studio, we're shelling out $50 for pizza, like whatever it may be. Like we are in business to build this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And by building this neighborhood, it becomes good for business.
Something Natalia and I talk about a lot is just that work is a social endeavor, period.
Yeah. It's like, those are the people who, it's crazy. Like we talk about this all the time, but like this bowling event we had on Saturday, I would say like 2/3 of the people is their first time coming to an event.
Of ours.
Sorry. It's the only time they've ever been outside.
I guess I didn't really need to clarify.
But they just play a lot of Minecraft.
Many such games?
I love Minecraft. But like probably had like 10 people walk up and say like, I found you guys on YouTube last year. I've been watching every video. Someone's like, I've been following Maya Higa since 2020. It was so cool when I saw you guys like go interview her. And like, I know you guys are in the same city as me and stuff like that. And it's just like, keep hearing this. Like, I finally worked up the courage to like come to something and here I am. I might have shared with you previously when we spoke, like the one aspiring author who came to a Show Your Work event. And she was like, this is the first time I've shown my novel to anyone other than my roommate. You know, she like passed out printouts to everyone. That was incredible, right? But yeah, it's just like, you know, can get some more like tactical like conversation, you know, around events and stuff. But like people are following along when you build that depth. You know, you can open up our YouTube channel, right? It's not like we have 1 million subscribers. We have 6,000 right now. But it's like, I know a lot of those, like a lot of those people show up and we can put faces to them and we know exactly who we're making things for, right? And that's really cool. And it's like
really rare.
Yeah. And like, to be honest, it's like, I've been uploading stuff on the internet since I was like 14, 15. Right. And like this last year might be, at least for like, you know, creative endeavors that I've been spearheading, it's like been some of the first times where I really like see that directly, you know, that fit.
If you're building your whole video business on platforms like YouTube, here's the uncomfortable truth. They own the audience relationship, not you. That's where Open Video comes in. It lets you host your videos on your own domain under your own brand so you control the channel, the data, and the direct connection to your viewers. And now with the new Open Video MCP server, you could do even more without taking your focus off of your content. With their MCP server, an AI agent can upload, tag, organize, and even analyze your entire video library from a single prompt. Your video stays yours, the busy work gets automated, and you can focus on creating. Check out Open Video for all the details. That's open.video.
When we first talked, we had you map out like the internet neighborhoods or the online neighborhoods of Chicago. And you described it as like, there's the literary community and there's the improv and then there's like the entrepreneurship. And I'm really curious to know, you hosted this storytelling workshop where a guy who'd been running like a monthly storytelling sat down with a bunch
Scott
of 22-year-olds and tried to make YouTube videos. Tell us more about the creator scene in Chicago.
Yeah, I've always felt that Chicago is a city full of like artisans or like craftspeople, if you will. And not necessarily from a like, everyone's a woodworker here, right? Though I'm sure there's very talented woodworkers here. But it is a city where like people are very, very, very good at what they do, if not like the top of the craft. But they're very humble and they're very hardworking and they're not in it as much for the, you know, widespread attention, fame, if you will. I just think that there is this like, whether it's mentality or culture or just the reality of it, it does definitely always feel like a lot of that creativity happens in isolation. Because for one, it's a very gate-kept city, for sure. It's like those communities you brought up. I know I had brought up before. It's like, I know the literary communities up there in Ravenswood, but I'm not like super involved with it directly, right? I'm sure if I like really showed up to stuff and met someone, I'd become more involved. But for another, I think there is a bit of this like, you're always like, if you are at the top, you're always being flown out other places to go do the work. A lot of the work
you're being exported.
Yeah. A lot like Chicago, like, there's, a creator here, I think you included in the story you wrote, but, Dilla, yes. And he has this like phrase of like, everything dope comes from Chicago or everything. Yeah. Right. And it's like, I really do feel like, you know, when I first moved to the area, like Chance the Rapper was like one of, if not the biggest like rising artists. Right. And like, that export of Chicago culture and music was worldwide. So I think that is one thing where, again, it feels like if you do make it, you're just flying out all the time, if not leaving outright.
To specifically like New York or LA.
Yeah, because for sure. But with that being said, it's like, yeah, for us, it's just been like, great being a bridge to some of those different communities and scenes for sure. Because like more specifically to your question about the creator scene, it's like, again, my mentality is just like the word creator almost like doesn't mean anything anymore. So it's like when we host a bowling tournament and someone's like, one person's a YouTuber and one person's a designer and one person's a photographer and one person, you know, works for Adobe or this or that, right? It's like all those people are like welcome at what we're putting on, which, you know, it's been like cool being at that intersection, I guess.
Going back to like, dropping creator, you just said again, I want to go back a little bit to the offline versus creator mag difference. And we already talked about like how it's different and I articulated it for you. But you're probably in the middle of working on the latest issue of Offline. I know that over there, I don't know if we'll show it, but you've got the big whiteboard that's just covered in writing.
Yeah.
I'm curious how Offline is different than Creator Mag as expressed through the decisions you're making right now and who you're going to feature and what's going to be in it.
Yeah, it is funny because like if you look at that whiteboard, a lot of names are people who are predominantly on YouTube and like this or that. I think that's just from a like, for a while there's been always for me like a three-step kind of like three checkboxes when I'm like thinking about who to cover. One is the most important one is what do I actually have to say about this person that hasn't already been said? Because when I go and do an interview, I try to read everything that's ever been published about someone, any podcast they've done, this or that. So that I'm adding to the conversation. It's the classic, you know, like the first question I ask is a small summary of what's already they've already said. And then you go into, I'm sure you all prepare for interviews in a similar way. So there's that. The second checkbox is feasibility, right? Like, can I actually realistically get in the door with this person? Would I love to write a profile piece on Tyler, the creator? Absolutely. Would that take a lot of steps in networking to get there? Probably, you know? So what's actually feasible? What's realistic? And then the third thing is like, who am I like actually genuinely excited about? Like, what do I feel passionate about? Like I'm going to devote 3 months of my life, you know, and all the logistics that go into organizing a photo shoot. And, I'm speaking a lot in I too, but this is a we decision as well within our team, right?
Editor in chief over here.
I do at the end of the day carry the, you know, I make a lot of the final decisions, right? There isn't a, this person has to be a creator in the traditional sense, cap to it. But I think it's less about like, there's those guardrails around like who's someone wielding, you know, internet influence to create real world impact. But I really do think it's like when you think about the New Yorker or GQ or like whatever it may be. I mean, I guess GQ is a menswear magazine, but there is something to like, I hate the word, using the word taste these days, because I feel like it's become overused.
Taste, community, creator.
No shade to Taste Lion. But, you know, there's like a je ne sais quoi, right? Of like, what's the taste? What's the thread that brings these different subjects together? So I think like a lot of the spirit and ethos of Creator Mag, and like, if you just look at who we've covered, is like, just, it's like the narrowing down for offline has become, it's like, the three examples of folks I brought up, right? It is this like real world impact piece. But you know, it's like our next cover star is a filmmaker, right? And she's not necessarily like starting an animal sanctuary, right? And like doing what Maya Higa's doing. But like, you know, there are, she is directly inspiring people to create and tell stories in a different way, right? And she checks those three boxes. So yeah, like I would love to be like, this is like past those three boxes, like this is the secret sauce or this or that. But I really think it's just like a, our collective brain trust, like taste thing. And, there was something else.
I mean, it's very fun. This, again, you know, we have a, you know, the similarities between our publications, but for me, it's also like three boxes. And the third one is who do I want to devote our time to. And then it's, I like tell people about the three boxes, and it's like, well, really it's like, these are just like to like satisfy your desire to know whether or not I'm going to feature you, usually is the case. But it's like, it's so much broader than that. Like the third one is really the only one that matters. Right? Like, do we want to interview this person?
I will say one thing I forgot, but just remembered, is like, one thing I at least do love is, and I think what, like, I'm biased, but like I always set Creator Mag apart, is like finding people at really interesting inflection points. Past like John and Hank Green, they're pretty established. They've been on YouTube for 20 years. But, and it's not so much like this person is guaranteed to, you know, go to the moon. It's just like they are at this inflection point and capturing that moment in their lives and their creative process and all that. Because at the end of the day, it's like, we're publishing indie magazine, right? It's like, that is the secret sauce, right? Yeah. It's like, how do we find those people? And I brought up my friend Mateo, who's the first cover story, who works at Beast now. And, you know, in passing, like all the conversations we've had over the years, he's like, so if I hit up Jimmy and was just like, hey, you should do this, you know, months long profile, you know, be on the cover of Creator Mag, like, would you want to do that? And my answer has always kind of been like, even if the opportunity presented itself, it's like, what do I have to add? You know, and it's like, that guy's been talked about a lot, you know, he's become more and more famous. It's like, sure, maybe that would like present a boost in sales, but like, I'm not sure how much like our publication has to add.
Kind
to
of
that
boring
story.
For you.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't want to be just another person who's interviewing Mr. Beast. It's like, what am I going to say? The timing thing is so hard too, because not all of our interviews are like so timing based. Even this one is not like so timing. The timing here, you know, to go fourth wall is that we're in Chicago and it's this great opportunity to talk to you. But I mean, that's like what magazine journalism is, when it's not like this like news based, we're putting out a newspaper every day and it's like we're putting out something once a month or once a quarter. It's like, we have so little space. Who are we going to talk to that it makes sense to talk to now? And it's like the planning in advance of like, if it's going to take 3 months to put together this story, like you really have to dig around for like, will this be the right story 3 months from now if we're making the decision to do it now? Platform. So you're on Substack, you're on YouTube, you're in print, if you're going to call that a platform, events. You're on LinkedIn, you know, you're on short
unfortunately.
Video, unfortunately. I've long ago swallowed that shame.
Hey, the LinkedIn games are great. Look, I've gotten hooked on
them. I get the daily notification for Zip.
Yeah. If you had to like delete one platform from the world. LinkedIn?
Nah.
In as much as, I mean, one of the platforms that you use that is like part of your work. But
I feel like guilty for saying this, but like Instagram, you know, it's just like,
interesting.
I think like you think about magazines and like this wave of like how legacy publications have adapted. It's like they do carry the legacy with them, and that's carried over to, I know you didn't bring up Instagram, but like,
no, that's one of them. Yeah.
I've never been, I know that, I've like just never been an Instagram person myself. Like I deleted my original one way back when, and then eventually it's just like, you go to events these days, it's like, I talk to like people who consider it like a portfolio, right? These days, right? In the creative world in particular, but even past the creative world. I mean, like you think about how many entrepreneur bros are doing
watch me build my startup. Every day, right?
We've interviewed some of them.
But I don't know. I just think like, you know, we have made a lot of short form and we've made a lot of stuff we're proud of. And like, it has led to, you know, different things and opportunities and this or that. But I just think it's such a time suck. And like, we've really pulled back to focus more on long form because like, so many more sales come from our long form videos. And like, so many people, as I mentioned, when we go to our events, say like, I watch you guys on YouTube and like interact with the depth. And I'm just like, I don't know. Again, I'm showing my biases here as someone who like enjoys sitting on the bus and reading books, but I'm just like, I think a short form video. Yeah. I've always been an old soul. I had an Uber driver say that to me last year. He clocked me so hard. It was our team was like in an Uber and we were going to a shoot. And I just like, I don't even know if I said much. And he just went, "You have an old soul." Wow. He was like, "Are you like a writer or something?" I was like, "Holy shit."
The general vibe you give off.
Team was just laughing so much. It's the beard and scratch a little bit. But I just think short form video. It's like, I think the world would be better off without it.
Is Instagram like a discoverability platform? Does your audience come to you through Instagram at all, or is it like more
so
YouTube?
I think like where we approach Instagram now, like there is a degree of discoverability, but like it's really just for events. Like it's like we kind of build the world out around the events of just like this bowling tournament we just hosted, you know, Chris and I worked on, mostly Chris worked on two shorts about just like talking like why we're doing this, the thought behind it, here's what's going to happen. And then of course just like sharing like actual community stuff, here's the photos from the event after the fact. It's like people see that and people interact with it and it like builds that depth for sure. But I just think from like the top of funnel standpoint, like YouTube is so much stronger for us for sure. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I know you're asking, it's like, if you could, what could we take off the internet?
No, it's great. You've talked a lot about the ethos of like the creator mag and offline mag and what drives both. I'm curious as to the reader, the average reader, and you've spoken about what drives your editorial decisions too. So I'm wondering, like, who is the offline reader?
Yeah, that's a good point. I might have said briefly before, but like we've been talking about the rebrand for like all of 2025. But like towards the end of the year, when it was like becoming more like, okay, this is coming up, I was like, I need to just bang out like a long Notion page that's like who we are, our mission, who this is for, like all that, because, you know, I really subscribe to the idea that like writing is thinking,
yeah,
you know, and just like,
so do we.
Yeah, we can talk about this all we want, but like, it has to be like the Bible has to be there to some degree. And after, you know, a year of doing this, I really came to these like three archetypes. One is Bohemian Billy. So it's like, you know, the 19, 20 year old camera nerd, who loves nothing more than, you know, logging off to like go create something, right? And meet other, you know, artists like them, what have you. It's Literary Lucy, who is the 27-year-old aspiring. It's a 27-year-old bookworm, right? Who like wants to publish a book and wants to like talk about, you know, the stories that are really captivating them. And it's like, is a member of book clubs and stuff like that. And then it's Spelunker Steve. So it's who's the person that like an album comes out and they want to go down every Reddit rabbit hole and they want to read every, you know, Pitchfork review, right? Just to be like, did you know this about that thing, right? And as I was getting to before, it's like, I mean, for one, it's like when you know that's who you're writing for and that's who you're creating for, it just like, in my opinion, makes the output better, whether it's the events, whether it's the magazine, what have you. But it's also like at the end of the day, how like we categorize success. Again, those three people interact with the internet and art and culture in different ways, but those three people can be in a room and have a good conversation. That's like how we know we're successful.
Mm-hmm. I dig it. I definitely feel like I'm a bit of a spelunker.
You definitely are.
My example, and it's like not, I won't like name the specific person who like comes to mind when I kind of drew up this archetype, but I've always been a humongous Childish Gambino, you know, Donald Glover fan. Like the first show I ever like watched with my siblings and everything was Community. Mm-hmm. And from there, you know, his music and this or that. I've like listened to the whole season of Dissect, you know, multiple times. That goes into Because the Internet. But then someone who's a regular event attendee, this or that, was in the studio one day. And he was just like, we were bonding over the fact that we're such big Donald Glover fans. But then he was like, but do you remember this mixtape from 2008? And like, he was just like going deep. And I was like, oh, there's levels to this. Yeah. You know? And like that like was a light bulb in my head of just like, yeah, like I feel like we all have that to a degree, but we all know that person too. Who's just right. Like, yeah. I have read every subreddit post.
Who's gone even deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're probably winding down a little bit, maybe some more meta creator economy questions. First, let's say, you know, you're at Thanksgiving, somebody who does not work in this industry at all, some aunt, whatever, asks you like, what even is the creator economy these days? Like, what do I need to know about that? What's your like very succinct description? You've articulated this kind of earlier and, you know, we don't want to use the word creator economy, et cetera, but like that type of person asks you, what is this? What world are you working in? How would you tell them?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my aunt actually runs a candy business that she like grew a sizable following in on Long Island.
Yeah. Should have picked your great aunt.
Yeah. Great aunt. I mean, like for one, I really like strongly do feel it's like the creator economy is the economy. But like when it comes to like that succinct definition these days, I really do speak to like the, you know, the online personalities, the filmmakers, the people you see on your screens, right? It is the trading of information and goods and, you know, businesses being built off the back of the internet. So I feel like you reacted briefly.
The business is being built. That was my next question is like, what are you seeing as the most effective, perhaps most durable for the long term businesses being built in this subsection of the economy?
I mean, I think like depth always wins for sure. It's like, it is interesting. We talked about this at the Celebration of Life. It was like some of the core conversation points, but you know, it's like this whole narrative about YouTube being the new TV that like really started in 2022, 2023 to the point where now it's like, almost feels like, yeah, we all know this, right? It's almost like stale to a degree. And what's interesting is just like there is this conversation around like, is YouTube becoming uncool? You know, long form, because obviously like live is bigger than ever, right? Between streaming, when we hosted that event, it was right after the skyscraper, the guy who climbed.
Oh, Alex Honnold.
Yeah,
in Taipei.
And you know, you do have like short form like shows, right, are bigger than ever. You know, the subway takes the world.
That's
right?
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Said that. So it is kind of funny to think about. It's like YouTube was like cooler than TV and then became the new TV. But then it's like, is YouTube gonna then go the way of TV?
Is YouTube
because it's so
them?
Mainstream? Is YouTube chopped? But
it's clipped.
We
gotta stop this.
Whether or not that's true, like at the end of the day, like I think streaming's having a moment. I think live is going nowhere for sure. You know, people talk about it's like sports has been carrying the cable bundle for so long, right? Yeah, at the end of the day, it's like long form and depth will always be king. Whoever can fill seats, whoever can fill a room, whoever can sell a t-shirt or a book, it's like that's the real strength at the end of the day. And those are the people who will be around for, you know, 20 years.
I, at the panel I moderated at ONA here, yesterday I interviewed a guy I'd already interviewed before, Matt Brown. He's actually in Chicago. He has this newsletter, Extra Points. It's like the business of college sports. And I found a quote from my original transcript with him where, you know, just to like really boil down the paraphrase, he's like, you know, with newsletters, cause he was talking about like, marketplaces for like selling newsletters. It's like people will talk about open rate or subscriber count, whatever. It's like the only metric that matters is the direct deposit hitting my Stripe account. Like that's at the end of the day, this is a business, romantic notions aside, growth metrics, whatever that can be so argued about like what they're actually measuring. He's like, what matters is the money hitting the account and whether or not you have a viable business, which is kind of what you were saying there. It's like you're bullish on businesses that make money. Like if you can sell a t-shirt, if you can put butts in seats, if you can get people here in your loft studio, like that's what's durable.
And I might be wrong. You know?
You're like not. I don't think you're wrong.
My thesis just around like, you know, it's like Because I've met, you know, TikTokers with 5 million followers who can't sell a t-shirt, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the classic thing. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's such a race to the bottom right now with AI. And, you know, obviously the word, we've gone this whole time and haven't said the word slot, but it's just like,
wow,
you know, 20 million videos are uploaded on YouTube every day or whatever, right? And it's just like, you know, we're all humans. You can make a lot of short form videos and like, you know, continue that up, but you're going to either burn out eventually or lose interest, or audiences are going to lose interest in you. And these platforms don't pay your healthcare, right? It's like, you're always replaceable. And I don't say that in like a negative, like doomer way. I just say it from a, like, yeah, if you're not like building something real or tangible, you know, but then I say this and then you see these like 19-year-old kids with 20 faceless YouTube channels making $1 million a year. So it's like, maybe they know something I don't.
They do. I don't know either.
But I wouldn't want to be that kid. So.
This has obviously been like, I can pick up that this is like super fulfilling for you, just the in-person element, the physical copies of things. I am curious, with you being in writing for so long and doing a lot of long form, what is your creative hygiene like in order to, you also talk about burnout.
Yeah,
to keep doing it.
That was a good question. Chris can attest to, I do not exercise as much as I need to. But
who among us?
I am here. I'm here late. But yeah, I mean, I think like there's something in this balance between like confidence and ego, you know, just like, I grew up a Kanye fan. I'm certainly have not been a Kanye fan for a while now, but like, I will say that Genius Doc and just like the, you know, people always refer to that scene where he walks into, is it Rockefeller? And he just like he puts the CD in and he's rapping. Like, no one's giving him any time of day. Right. There's also the Jay-Z quote from that, of like, closed mouths don't get fed and all that. Right. It's like, the reality is, it's like, if you are going to put creative output in the world, that you are making for yourself, that you believe in, but also like to some degree you do hope it connects and it sparks conversations and all that, it's like you have to believe in what you're doing, because you have to keep showing up. Because if you really want to do this for 20 years, you want to be setting, like greasing the airplane tracks for like work you want to be doing 20 years from now, right? I remember like Bill Simmons has had a quote before where he talks about like, you know, we think so much about like, we have to have it all figured out on short form, especially or whatever these days at a young age. But he's like, writers peak at 38, because that's when it's like, you have enough life experience to actually like be a good writer. Yeah. But you also like have the youth and energy to like still, you know, put out a lot of stuff. And I won't like pretend that the day to day is always easy. And like, this is all very fulfilling. It's also all very stressful, and we haven't raised money and we've been bootstrapping, you know, and all that. But I really do think about like coming back to, it's like, I know exactly who we're doing this for, and I know who we're writing for and who we're hosting for, and to have that part figured out. And then the other part is just like, what's speaking to me and the stories I care about and this or that. Like, I just love reading profiles. You know, I think they just like have always said so much about the human condition. It's always like, even if it's a forum that's dying to a degree, you know, there's just like nothing like a good profile to like get the closest we can to like understanding what's in someone's brain. You know,
you're putting a lot of pressure on us for.
That's fine. But yeah, so I don't know. It's like, to some degree, it's, you have to be a fan of the format, the craft, to, in order to like actually have the confidence to go do it. But you can't lean into too much, as we saw with Kanye, right? Now, where it's just like, you have to like certainly be humble and keep showing up, you know, because then it's like, if something doesn't resonate to the degree you want to, it's just like, okay, what's most important again is that I show up the next day for sure.
We'll end it there. Nate, thank you. Natalia, a pleasure to co-host with you. Thank you, Chris, behind the camera. I'm looking right at Chris and you, audience.
Shout out to Chris.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
Hi there, my name's Tom. I'm the producer of the Creator Spotlight podcast. If you enjoyed the episode with Nathan and are looking for something similar, I would recommend our recent episode with Tyler Bainbridge. He is also building a media company similar to Nathan, focused around community, events, physical products, but he's taken a slightly different approach. He's taken on funding instead of bootstrapping the whole thing. It's a good episode. I'd recommend that one next.